are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. And that's Uncle Omishar, very often on this program, and really nice. And so this is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox and Marshall.
Aloha, Felicia.
Aloha. We're going to have a really good start off from hearing from our friends on Hawaii Island, giving a summary of what has come to pass relative to the contested court case hearings for the 30-meter telescope. All the testimonies are done, so we are really lucky. Kai Aloha is going to be calling in and helping us, you know, understand what's up with that. And then most of the show is going to be really a community discussion. We have some people from the Kauai Coalition Community Associations, and a lot will have to do with the general plan update. But there's so many issues coming up for the island that it's a great opportunity for us to be discussing any and all of them. So, and Walton, Sharon Goodwin, and I believe Kamealoha Hanohano Smith will be coming in, and then, you know, different callers. So I'd like to say that Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store, Betty Jean Nativio, and Howley Girl.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Betty Jean Nativio, artist for hire, teaching both art and cooking, including the School of Chocolate Art for all ages and abilities. Multi-art mediums, including reverse glass painting, available for events, signage, custom gifts, and more. More information at BettyJeanNativio.com or 808-652-3781.
Howley Girl Island Suites presents The Tea Room in the gallery located in Kinipopo Shopping Center in Kapa'a, offering full-service high tea and desserts. More information at 808-822-2253.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, Marshall, do we have our wonderful caller on the air?
She's sure here.
Aloha. Kei aloha.
Oh, aloha.
Hi.
So, hi, how are you?
Good. I am so thankful to have you call in. And for our listeners that don't know your hero status, that's what I consider you anyway. You've been working on making sure that the top of Mauna Kea, the mountain, is being really honored and, well, trying anyway, with the 30-meter mm-hmm. telescope. And your background is actually in astronomy, correct?
Part of it, yes.
So maybe you can tell the listener who you are and then give us a summary of what's been going on over there. Because the victories that you guys are having, or at least the movement that you're making, really affects every one of us across the islands as we are confronting sometimes an uneven bureaucracy and what is okay for whom and what's not okay for others.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much first, you know, for having me. It's an honor to join you folks. And you folks are doing some great work over there also. So my name's Kealoha Tishoda. I was previously a telescope systems specialist for the British government on the James Clerk Maxwell submillimeter radio telescope. I'm also a cultural practitioner, and at a certain point early in 2000s, I left my job because I was not able to support some of the university's arguments for more development on Mauna Kea. We our group, Mauna Kea Nainahole, which is basically cultural practitioners with genealogical ties to Mauna Kea as cultural or lineal descendants, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we formed just to kind of protect and preserve some of the sacred stories and oral histories and connections to Mauna Kea. And, yeah, so in around 2000, we began to challenge because the landscape, the sacred landscape of Mauna Kea was basically being taken over by man-made structures. And we felt that there was a need for balance, and we actually approached it with a simple perspective of trying to bring balance back. And our position was no further development, you know, that the university needed to pay reasonable rent so that we could help restore the mountain. Because they only pay a dollar at this point. They still only pay a dollar.
Right. And what I mm-hmm. what I watch in observing these contested case hearings, which I feel yeah. like is like taking a mini course in college on both Hawaiian cultural practices as well as government and law, they say they need to be there because it's just about the best real estate on the entire planet for doing this, and yet it's a dollar a year.
Yes. In other words, they don't want to pay for the best real estate, so to speak. Maybe it's the best real estate because they don't have to pay. I mean, 13 of the richest nations on Earth are operating up there, and they're paying, you know, state taxpayers are actually subsidizing all of this international astronomy because they're paying nothing back into the system.
And it's the rent mm-hmm. for using these telescopes, especially the projected rent for this new one, is measured in millions of dollars a night. And when they're talking about astronomical location on the planet, I was kind of being playful with the best real estate, but saying because of the height, the clarity of the mm-hmm. skies, and the distance from everything, it really mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. literally one of what they can, you know, they present it as the best place to put it anywhere on the planet. So that seems really mm-hmm. amazing to me that there's not compensation even. I mean, that's not the goal, but the point is that when they say,
right?
It's not the goal, but when they say, we can't put this anywhere else that's nearly as good, and yet there's very little contribution back to the community where it's affecting the lives of the people who live around it.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, you know, there were basically three simple positions, you know. One was also there's this jurisdictional confusion of having Mauna Kea, you know, the summit of Mauna Kea run by the university itself, but they're the developer, you know, so the fox guarding the hen house. They can't be the developer and the applicant on the permit, and, you know, basically giving the university itself as an educational institution can pay a dollar a year for the use of ceded lands, quote unquote ceded lands, right? But they can't extend that to the foreign governments and foreign corporations that are using the mountain, right?
Right.
So we also said that the community, it should be a community-based management structure, not one just with the university deciding, you know, holding all the cards, because the state actually can't relinquish their control over those lands because those are conservation lands. They're also, quote unquote, ceded lands held by the kingdom
mm-hmm.
And now, you know, occupied. And so they have to give back something. But like you said, that's not our goal. The reason why we're in the contested case hearing, the reason why we fought for all these years, we've won four cases now, maybe actually five. Kalani just won another case, which was the TMT's sublease case. But we've won the Supreme Court, the federal court, and the state courts, all on this issue. So it appears the law is actually supportive of not only Native Hawaiian cultural rights and religious rights, but also environmental rights, because Hawaii is unique in that way, in that we have protection of our environment written into our constitution.
Right. We are lucky with that.
Yes, we are so lucky. And I think that is what is really the combination of the two really help secure a strong legal precedent for the protection of Hawaii as a whole. And so why I think this case is kind of important, why I think others think so too, is that it will help determine how our conservation lands are handled in the future, because a lot of Hawaii is in conservation.
Right, and this is a conservation area that, being up there, it looks like an industrial site.
Well, they're trying to make, you know, they're trying to make industrialization the exception. They're trying to actually create a situation where they rezone it without actually rezoning it.
So they would be the state legislatures? That's the state legislature?
They've been trying. There's some really bad bills, including ones completely trying to eliminate the contested case hearing process at all. And if I may, I just want to briefly explain why contested case hearings are so important. You know, they're actually a people's process. To participate in one, you don't have to be a lawyer. You don't have to have a lawyer. Because it's quasi-judicial. So the rules of evidence don't apply to a contested case hearing where they would in a normal court. Mm. So the rules are relaxed a bit. And the object of having a contested case hearing is to make sure that the decision makers are making an informed decision. So if they know a land use, you know, or a project will affect, you know, environmental or recreational users or Native Hawaiians, then there's an ability, a process to enter into to help DLNR make an informed decision. That's all that these are for. They're supposed to relieve regular citizens from having to go into the expensive and difficult court system.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that, because I did not understand that. There's about 18 interveners, is that correct?
Actually, I think it's 13 now, because some... There were about 18. Some of them chose to become witnesses for the hearing officer. So that meant they would testify, but they wouldn't have to do the other stuff, you know, be responsible for all the other stuff, because it can get a little bit, it's difficult.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, people have practically been getting law practice. It's been almost 4 months, it seems, maybe 3 to 4 months of
testimony. It was 5 months.
5 months.
And we actually lost our lawyer in the beginning part of it, not of his doing, but because the hearing officer's rules were very strict on time. And she, you know, normally everyone gets out their schedule book and says, okay, Your Honor, I can meet during this time, you know. But she just sort of set the date, and he couldn't do it because he was representing all these other clients that he has in other cases. And so, you know, it would have been easier to have a lawyer, but we have done, we've won two other contested case hearings in a court of law, actually, because we appeal from the contested case. Yeah.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Kealoha, and we're discussing the contested case hearings for Mauna Kea. So, can you help us, the listener, understand the essence of the argument that was placed in this specific case,
mm-hmm.
and then what you find is the highlights and the strengths of both sides? Like, I honestly didn't see something where I saw the 30-meter telescope people, they were calling it TOI, or I didn't actually ever see them look strong, but I haven't seen every single day of it. What was the strengths of their arguments?
Okay, yeah. First, let me just say that we ended up having 44 days of hearing.
Okay.
And 71 witnesses.
Okay, yeah, quite a
lot.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It was a lot. And what first, you know, just to explain, it was very hard because there were, you know, solid weeks where we're just scheduled every day, except for Fridays for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who has a regular job pretty much had to set that aside. It was a profound cost, and that island is much bigger than ours, and so, you could fit all the islands within Hawaii Island. So many people are driving a long way.
And some of the huge things to overcome were that we had people from outer islands participating. So that would mean they would have to fly every week to, Hilo. We had people from Kona side having to travel, and Waimea, and all over the place. So it's very, very difficult. And then, you know, you have to prepare every night for witnesses. So by the time people got home, it's late. And then they have to wake up, you know, when it's dark, they don't return till it's dark. So there was all of that. But on the other hand, there was also this beautiful outpouring of support. So every day we were fed, every day. And we had a whole support group led by Chandel and Uncle Bimo organizing all of this amazing food. And then we had healers come and give us lomi and things like that during lunch. And so there was this very amazing, other side to it. But it was for sure, without question, really, really tough. And I feel blessed to have been able to make it through just me as an individual, but I feel all the other petitioners must feel very similar. I mean, the outpouring of love and joy has been overwhelming to us.
Well, I know those of us from around the islands have been happy to be giving you all that emotional support, too. We've been paying attention. I want to give a shout-out to Naleo Television. That's been very important, and to, I think it's called Occupy Hawaii, who has been putting it online on YouTube. So it's really an excellent place to learn. So when I'm looking at the high points of either side.
Okay, yes.
Mm-hmm. The high points, I could give a few of them, but I'm sure you could give more, is that what we were seeing in the procedures is that the archaeological studies, most of the perspectives that were put in there was like, it's a bunch of rocks, basically. Not even Pohaku, but, a bunch of rocks. This might have happened, in the past. There's a couple trails that's pretty evident that were up there. But essentially not really recognizing that it could be possible that this high peak of the mountain would have that much significance, or that a new telescope, how much more damage is one more telescope than the last 12? You know, that felt like what the argument was without...
Well,
go ahead.
Yes. Let me speak to that right here. I think the primary argument of the university was, yes, this telescope will have impact, cumulative impact even, but the mountain is messed up anyways. So what difference does it make? Which I know that sounds oversimplified, and you can't imagine an actual educational institution trying to claim that as a legitimate argument.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, that was their argument. That, and whatever impact we can't suffer, they will mitigate. And, mitigation under the law means you must reduce the impact to less than significant. Okay. Now, one of the things that we brought forward and that is important to this issue is that the TMT should never even have been considered, because the last time NASA Keck Observatory was forced to do a cumulative impact study, a proper one, we went to court and won. The court said you must redo it because you don't understand what cumulative means. Cumulative impact is the sum of all the impact. Right? Past, present, reasonable, foreseeable, future. So they had to redo it. When they redid it, their finding was 30 years of astronomy development on Mauna Kea has resulted in adverse, significant, and substantial impact to the cultural and natural resources of Mauna Kea. Period. That was their finding. So given that finding, and given the fact that the state, before they can approve a project in a conservation district, they have to answer the question, will the project have adverse or significant impact? Well, of course it does, because the federal EIS already said so. Not only substantial and adverse, but significant, adverse, and substantial.
Right. And so, I also watched a day where it happened to be Group 70 was the same ones who did the master plan there. That's the right. Same group who did the Mahalapu dairy project. And what we're seeing with that is that, you know, the Office of Environmental Quality Control and the Department of Health were rejecting what has come out from Group 70. It really did not do a robust environmental impact statement. And the master plan that was done for Mauna Kea, from mm-hmm. what I watched, mm-hmm. was that it varied greatly from what was actually in the end being proposed. So when the 30-meter telescope is not in agreement with what was the master plan.
No, exactly. I mean, and the master plan, BLNR never, the Board of Land and Natural Resources never even adopted it. So all of the proposed things that were turning up in the master plan, you know, they were twofold. One is they don't even adhere to their own plan, right? Number two is Group 70 didn't do a very comprehensive study of all of the issues that were brought forward. You know, I mean, that's the point of doing the plan, right, is to address all the issues and be able to actually admit if you can't fulfill them also. That's the same thing with an EIS. It's to inform the decision. And in this case, it was meant because, you know, we won one of the court cases that there's no plan, right? So they had to do one, but... And now they've done a third one that is neither the master plan or not the master plan. You know, I mean, it's like the third one that's completely out here in left field, none of which address the TMT either.
The 30-meter telescope, yes. And that
yes.
we saw right. That the archaeologist, the core archaeological study, was simply a cut and paste of something that had happened quite some time
yes.
earlier. And, in fact, the archaeologist not only couldn't, even didn't attempt to use the Hawaiian words for the craters, but hadn't
right.
even read what he turned in. So
no, I know
that
I,
was.
I think you
that
know,
was
in
pretty
a way,
amazing.
I felt a little sorry for him because they didn't even inform him what was he was going to be facing, and then in the end, he actually said he used a template. He didn't. This was not his own testimony, and. When you go into a hearing, you have to swear that that's your testimony.
Right.
And
so
he was like, no, I used a template and it belonged to the other archaeologist.
So we saw layers and yeah. layers of what I would consider really sloppy application work.
Exactly.
And you know, what happened is we saw many, many practitioners, Hawaiian practitioners,
yes.
and then just people from within the culture. I don't even know if it's the right word to use, practitioner for them. But what we saw was layers and layers of knowledge of the complexity of the culture and so
yes.
much awareness of the history. And from the Olelo and the Oli from the past, and just kind of, you know, an amazing amount of depth on the language. And the
yes.
histories of what
yes.
up there. So we, you know, it was for me in watching it, I learned so much in watching it. But what was stark was even University of Hawaii, seemed to be, and also the Office of Mauna Kea Management, hadn't even considered these things to the point where the director of Office of Mauna Kea Management said she did not consider the mountain sacred. It's kind of like... the mayor of Maui making, you know, pretty crass statements about the Pohaku and the history of Maui not being relevant, you know.
Right.
So when I look at that, what is the next steps? Like for me as a viewer, and I will recognize my bias. Though it's like astronomy is interesting to me. My nephew is working on the Giant Magellan Telescope. He's one of the engineers on that. It's not that I have a big thing against astronomy, but I was really shocked at the cavalier attitude towards having any real level of compliance to put this big industry right on top of that mountain where, you know, people want to just have a bed and breakfast and, you know, they're just raked over the coals for it. So it seemed like very much a two-tiered system. So when I watch it, I think, all right, it's pretty clear they did not do what was required. But what are you anticipating to come out of this?
Well, you know, a couple of things. You know, completely separate from everything, this was this process. You know, wherever there are challenges, there's also the blessings too, right? Or wherever the shadows are, there's the virtue. That's what I've been working on a lot lately, is finding the virtue in the shadow. The virtue in the shadow here, I think, is that this was the Kapu Aloha is what the takeaway is, that when a people are colonized, the first thing that is taken is their sacred consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
The Kapu Aloha and the need for everyone to come forward to stop the desecration. I mean, people can see it as a form of civil disobedience, but Uncle Kaliko teaches us that it wasn't civil disobedience we were doing, it was civil assistance. Because in fact, we were in a court of law awaiting the final decision from the court, but they were trying to move the bulldozers while that was happening.
Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court backed you guys up. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Supreme Court, exactly. So what was really happening was we were using our human body, the kia'i. You know, we're called by the mauna. And so they came, and they put their human body first and laid down in front of the bulldozer, essentially.
Right.
To say, please don't do this because we have no way. We have no ceremony to help you have forgiveness for the breaking of this desecration. This is desecration. Make no bones about it. That's what was really brought through this hearing, was the understanding that this is desecration and there is a law in Hawaii and it has a punishment of, you know, 1 year in prison and or, you know, a $10,000 fine or both. And yet no one was enforcing desecration law. But that is, in fact, what it was.
Right. And if, saw, too, if people built an ahu, that was almost seen like a desecration and required a permit where this whole big telescope did not. How many weeks will it be before we hear an outcome?
You know, it could be a long time. We have 5 weeks just estimated to wait for the transcripts. By the way, the transcripts are a big deal. There are 50 volumes. And I don't know exactly how big a volume is, but they're going to cost thousands of dollars.
Well,
so
it's
another one of these problems, or one of the things that needs a shadow that needs to be brought forth, is that, you know, this is a government process and they're charging us thousands of dollars to reclaim our own testimony that is required even make our findings of fact and conclusions of law. And that is problematic because it's no longer a people's process if the cost makes it prohibitive to even participate.
And you're listening to KKCR.
We're talking tens of thousands of dollars.
You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. We have Kealoha on the phone with us discussing the contested case hearings for the 30-meter telescope on Hawaii Island. Mm-hmm. And we're learning how this applies really to all of the citizens, because what you guys are experiencing with the contested case hearings and what the state itself is learning, the state government, so I'm saying state intentionally, is really how do they have to be responsible to the the community in the day and age of social media when we are all paying attention. It is when all eyes are on the process.
That is so true. I mean, and okay, so that would be the second thing I would say is, you know, it's the people's process. We're holding that down. We're committing civil assistance. We're saying, hey, you're going to break the law if you do this. Okay? Same thing with Standing Rock, right?
Yes.
And so what people are seeing is globally, because of the social media and because of what's going on, people are being called to stand for what is right, to say, hey, this is not okay, but we still aloha you, but we're going to aloha you to help you do what is right, not only by the law, but what is right for the earth. Because now we are all evolving into earth protectors, not just a protector of this site or this sacred site, but of the whole. Because I believe there's this global consciousness that is underlying everything that is happening, and it is awakening and quickening our spirit to stand for Papahānaumoku, Earth Mother.
Kailuha, have you heard of the Native Nations Rise Camp and March happening in Washington, D.C., starting today?
No, I'm sorry. I've been out of the loop, but tell me more.
Well, it is largely coming out of the Standing Rock protests.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're calling on Native peoples and all peoples to join them. Starting today, there is a camp with teepees, and they're not going to actually camp there overnight. It's sort of a symbolic camp, but there will be cultural workshops and educational things like that. And then on Friday, there's a march to the White House. But so this had been planned for some time, but it actually comes as today a federal judge has denied the request by the Standing Rock Sioux and Cheyenne River tribes to halt construction of that final piece of the Dakota Access Pipeline. They say that the oil could start flowing as early as next week.
That's pretty disappointing, yes?
Yes. Yes, but like I said, as we see the shadow, we're finding, you know, the will of the people. And the will is, it's almost as if the earth is conspiring with the humans to raise the standard of aloha. So I have faith that whatever decision happens, something else will come and huli that, change that, because I don't think we can continue. We just simply can't continue doing this. You know, we're all on this train, and some of us are looking outside going, oh, you know, there's an end over here and we're going to fall off. Right. And at some point we're now jumping off the train to say, look, we're not going to ride that train with you any longer, because we really cannot keep going like that. And I think people are choosing Papa. They're choosing Mother Earth. You say, I choose Mother Earth. I don't choose the corporate way of being, you know, because that is what nurtures me and my family and my community and my family on Earth, you know, my Earth family. And I really, you know, that's why, I mean, we're sustaining, going through these processes to bring that shadow to the light.
Well, thank you.
And welcoming the shadow, saying, okay, shadow, bring me to the light then. I'll take it.
Well, I want to thank
you. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And thank you so much for sharing all this beautiful knowledge and part of the experience that's happening there on Hawaii Island. And I know that there is a group of people over here on Kauai that when you guys have an opening in your schedule, we would like to host and welcome small team of you over here to share with our area, you know, your experience, and that we can reflect that aloha right back to you.
You know, I want to tell you how much we feel you folks. We really do. I mean, there are days when we're really having a hard time, but when we do that morning prayer every morning at 9 a.m., and by the way, we're still doing it. Everyone can please join us and just
just for the not only Standing Rock, but for Mauna Kea, to keep us going, because we have a number of months left to still keep doing all the legal work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we would absolutely welcome to come to see you folks. And, you know, we have some amazing young people that have a strong voice that needs to be heard. And, yes, we would welcome that. And we just thank you all for your support. It's been amazing. And there's just way more to come.
Okay. Well, we mahalo you for calling in and for sharing your manao with us.
Yes, thank you so much, Felicia. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha.
This word of the day is brought to you by Nahamana o Kawaikini, the students of Kawaikini. Hi, my name is Hanole. Today I will be talking about the fish ahi, or in English, tuna. The spelling of ahi is Okina Ahe'i, or in English, Okina Ahi. Here is a Hawaiian saying about ahi. Pololea kowaha o ke ahi, straight to the mouth of the ahi fish. The translation of the meaning of this saying is directly to the mouth, used in a fisherman's prayer to the gods to take the hook and bait directly to the mouth of the ahi. Mahalo.
And mahalo, Hanale Wan Keili Ho'omalu. That's our young man who was sharing with us. Sounds to me, looking at that name, he is probably the nephew of KKCR's beloved Sandy Swift. So we're moving on to Kauai, and we have two guests in the studio with us right now. We have Ann Walton and Sharon Goodwin. Got to make sure you guys got your mics up next to you. Thank you so much for coming in. What is the name of your community organization?
Well,
we have many hats, but which one are you?
Well, we have a loosely grouped bunch of people, I should say, that are called the Kauai Community Coalition. And we've basically been brought together because of our common interest in following the general plan process for the County of Kauai, and found that we were much more effective if we spoke with one voice, rather than a bunch of individual voices representing the public at large as we are interacting with the planning department and now the planning commission.
Yes, and there has been many divergent voices along with the Kauai Community Coalition. And Sharon, welcome.
Thank you, Felicia, Marshall. Thank you.
Yes. So we might, in the course of the session today, too, have different calls in from different community issues. When we're looking at the general plan update, that basically is saying, what are we looking for the future of Kauai? And, you know, where are we looking at working on the changes? And, I did communicate with the planning department also today, looking at, you know, what, you know, I have to give them some credit here. I contacted them a little late for them to be able to jump and definitely reflect back to us. But they did share the big changes that they felt that they attempted to make, or that they were working on making. I shouldn't say attempted. You know, their big additions that they hadn't had in there, though they need to work on more, is they mentioned, you know, climate change, sea level rise, energy sustainability, social equity, community health, place-based zoning, multimodal transportation, aging population, etc. You know, I think they are trying pretty hard. So what's your assessment, Ann? And I want to say you have a history, a work history of being pretty sharp at reading plans, right? You're with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. You worked with them at least for a number of years.
Yeah, I am now retired from NOAA. I worked for them for 20 years in natural resource management planning. So I've been on both sides of the equation in regards to developing natural resource plans. And so I have a good idea of what it takes to put a plan together and also engage with the public and also entertain diverse interests in the plan and input into the plan. I think that they have done well in many ways with a plan. They've listened to the public. They've included a lot of input from the public into the plan. They've made great strides towards improving the plan over the previous plan, which was put together in 2000, even though that was a good plan.
I have to say it was approved in 2000 or, you know, adopted in 2000. It was 5 years earlier was really when that work happened.
Right. So 2000 is what they consider sort of the starting point of the implementation of that plan. And they've branched out into new areas of consideration, for instance, as you just mentioned, climate change. And considering the social, the cultural, the economic side of civil society here on Kauai. However, as much as they've tried to do a very broad and comprehensive job at putting together the plan, we would really like to see this plan be more than just guidance. Because guidance is easily interpreted, and nobody is responsible for guidance. Nobody is accountable. And as we've seen with the previous plan, it doesn't necessarily get implemented.
So that means this all this work could go in, and it won't make a difference. It won't be observed.
It could go on the shelf. And part of, you know, creating a plan that really has a solid foundation and is implementable and gets results, which we're interested in, given the issues that we're dealing with here on Kauai, we need a plan with a foundation that really leads us to that accountability. And we have to be clear about where is it we want to go collectively. And that's been the hardest shift for the county to make, is to commit to a new paradigm for what do we want this island to look like by 2035, which is the end date of this plan. It's a pretty long period of time from 2020 to 2035 to have a plan considering what a dynamic and changing world we live in. So one of the main things that we've been focused on as a community group is to try and say we need a foundation here that gives us some clear direction where we're going, some milestones of achievement along the way, and ultimately some targets for where we want to be in 2035. What should this island look like?
So can you give some specifics, like my street language? I would say, you know, big issues we have is, like what we heard from the last caller, respect and reintegration at an authentic level of our host culture, our Hawaiian community, that it's not just history, it's a way of being, the ahupua'a system. Another one that comes to my mind is many, many people don't have housing.
Right.
Another one that comes to my mind is traffic. You know, we have a lot of traffic. We don't have the funds to follow up on it. What are some of the other things that you're seeing so the listener understands what you mean in what direction do we want to be in? What are we looking at?
Well, to start with, so that the listeners understand, in case they're not familiar with the general plan, and I just want to presume that a lot of people aren't, because
probably a lot of people aren't.
We don't see the whole community out there. But it covers 10 sectors, and there are sectors that everybody should be paying attention to because they're going to affect everybody's lives here on Kauai, starting with watersheds and housing, as you said, traffic, issues around equity and education, public spaces, heritage resources, energy sustainability, public safety, and hazards resilience. So I won't go through all 10 of them, but that just gives you a sampling of how important this is to our everyday lives and how important it is to get it right in the plan if we're really going to address these challenges. And that's what they are. And I think part of the problem has been that in the past, we haven't dealt with these issues. Parts of these, some of these sectors have been in the previous plan, but because we shelved the plan and there was no accountability for it, time has been our enemy. And it's exacerbated the issues we have around housing, particularly affordable housing, around traffic issues, impacts in the watershed, coastal impacts, and now we're beginning to understand climate impacts as well. Had we been dealing with these between 2000 and 2017, we would be further ahead in the game than we are now. So now we're taking sort of a retroactive approach, a reactive approach.
Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about all these things, I do want to say that the county did call us, and there is water outage on Ho'ohano Street in Hanama'ulu. So for probably 1 to 2 hours, the Department of Water crews are going to be making emergency repairs to a mainline break. So they're appreciating people's patience. So we know, like, for example, one of the county's big responsibilities is making sure people have infrastructure, the road to drive on, though that's shared with the state, water. And then in this case right now, they're having a water problem in Hanama'olu. They had to turn the water off. They're letting people know. The county does parks, public works. That includes the rubbish. Rubbish is a big issue, right?
Right.
Things like housing and education, that isn't too directly there, Quiliana. You know, they're trying to do some of the county housing. But so they have, there's a variation in where they have responsibility, right? So, like, what you're saying is they're looking to expand it. And when, if I'm understanding you correctly, when you're talking about this vision, is that we can't only look just directly at the pieces they have clear responsibility for. We have to take the broad brushstrokes across what it all means.
Correct. And that's something that we've emphasized in this plan, is that we need to stop segmenting different levels of responsibility that belong to the state versus the county versus the feds versus local communities. And we do think that there is a distinction between looking at the island as a whole and different communities, because different communities have their own priorities. But beyond that, we think there needs to be a framework. And by a framework, I mean, what direction are we going in? When we sit here and think about what we want this place to look like in 2035, how do we articulate that? How do we put it down in a way so we all have a common understanding and all of our actions move us in that direction?
Can you give me a couple of examples?
Well, I think a perfect example that you just touched on is housing. Obviously, right now, housing is a big issue, and in particular, affordable housing. What's this community going to look like, the community of Kauai as a whole, if we can't fulfill our affordable housing needs? We have the natural growth rate of the population here, so that's going to increase the number of people looking for affordable housing over time. What's it going to be by 2035 if we can't house people? What are the options? Either people are going to be living in housing situations that are not optimal, that are not good for them, comfortable.
Or maybe they're worried about almost living illegally. I know that that currently is a crisis, that people are living in maybe not permitted housing.
And that's very common. And I've heard that, and I wouldn't want to be quoted beyond this, but for the purpose of conversation, that 50% of the people on this island are living in non-legal situations. And it's no surprise to any of us.
That's a pretty high number. Maybe it could be that. I remember several decades back, it seemed like you could build a house, you could put a roof over your family's head if you wanted to, and we had the hurricane, and the building codes have gotten so profound that really building to code has become translated into a lot of homelessness, and the people who can actually build the code can't afford to actually live here, or they don't live here. The people who can afford to build to code and buy a home that's built to code very often are beyond built to code. They're very expensive houses, and it's just a third house or second house, and so we have that conflict there.
Right.
But when we want to live simply where we can fish and farm and have a simple house near where we fish and farm, well, somehow now you're breaking the law if you're doing that. That's my observation, is what I see out there.
And I think that that's the right observation, and also it shows the interconnectedness of everything, of all the, as we say, sectors in the general plan, but in basic community language, that it's affecting everything. Do we have the diversity of opportunities to earn living that will allow us to be able to afford housing here? What happens with that? And what happens with families? And does that break up families and people have to go to the mainland or Oahu to be able to afford to live? What happens with food and the cost of food on this island? We know that almost everything we put in our mouth, it comes from the mainland, and there's a cost associated with that. Well, that takes income away from housing. So we start to see the connection here between these different sectors and how they're basic issues of survival here in the community.
And what does the general plan update currently say about the economy of Kauai in general? Are we going to try to continue to rely heavily on tourism, or, you know, are we going to diversify a bit?
Well, that's a tricky question. It depends on which sector you look at. So the plan clearly recognizes that we are overly dependent on a single source of income, and that's tourism, a single sort of job opportunity on this island. We know the hazard of that. We've just gone through a very poor economy. We're just coming out of it right now. And what happens to tourism when the economy is very tight in this country? So it's clear, and it's been made clear in the plan, that that's not going to be sustainable for us into the future. However, it doesn't come up with specific solutions. We do know we need to diversify, but it does want to create opportunities for small businesses to exist and survive on this island. And there is a whole underground of small businesses here, but many of them are illegal because of zoning. And other reasons as well, the way that cash gets exchanged.
For example, just say cutting hair or doing a massage in your home, for the most part, that's like breaking the law. And so I know I live in a working class neighborhood, and so most people, you know, are breaking the law some way or another. And I want to compliment the county for not actually being pretty gnarly about it, because many people have some way of supplementing their income, you know, doing work out of their home. And so that's an issue that really needs to be in there, too. And then something that I see it's addressed somewhat, but it's still not necessarily to my comfort level when we talk about areas of income. I mean, economy. The visitor industry is one very large sector.
Right.
The military actually hires a lot of people. And then the land development industry and building. And so when we build houses, if we're building the high-end houses, there are many jobs that are associated with that, but they tend to not be for houses for people here. And often what happens with that also is it cuts off the access to the mountains and the ocean. And as with our first caller, when we are talking about customary practices for especially the Hawaiian community, but it's not only Hawaiians mm-hmm. that might want to go hunting or fishing. Actually, many people, this is the whole culture of this community, at least of the longer standing community, to be hunting and fishing. And as we block off the access to the beaches and the mountains, and, you know, many people end up incarcerated over these things. It is a really tough element. What I didn't feel like I saw in there, but I know that you've looked at it more deeply than me, I didn't feel that I saw it addressing our criminal justice system and the amount of people going into, incarceration and right. adjudication. Like, I would have liked to have some of them on the board. I would have liked to have a real inquiry, because that portion of our community, to me, is an important part that's saying the system as it is failing us. They might be failing the system also, but usually when you have a breakdown, most people don't grow up thinking, I want to break the law, I want to go to jail. It doesn't really work out for people very well. And most of these crimes are a reflection of poverty more than anything else, and being marginalized off their area. Do you see an area where that might be something that could be built into the discussion on the general plan?
Well, I think clearly, as you indicated, it's not pointed out in the general plan, but it's part of the social fabric of what's going on here. And it is linked to the economy, no question about it. So I think the plan touches on pieces of that. Looking at the economy, it's pretty clear. Looking at the lack of affordable housing, but also I think education. That's a really important part of the social fabric here and how people end up as adults, both in terms of, contributing, but also being able to sustain their own livelihoods and lifestyles here on the island. So it's not knit together in that way at all in the plan, but the plan does address pieces that if you looked at the connections, they're clearly there.
We did just play a piece from Kawaikini Charter School, and I think that I when we're looking at how we educate people, we are largely educating people along the standards that are set by the federal government and then backed up by the state governments.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily reflect the interests and the passions of the people born and raised, particularly in rural Hawaii, where they have a deeper connection perhaps with the natural environment than what the federal government might be envisioning.
Yeah, and I think an interesting thing is this plan is evolving, getting back to the general plan. And so there have been two drafts so far and then a third series of changes to the plan. And this last series of changes that went to the Planning Commission 2 weeks ago, January 28th, a new section was added on the Hawaiian schools and the need for the cultural context in education. And so I have to applaud the county for including that in the plan. And from their standpoint, what they said was they support this. So it's not as if the county is taking any action to, other than sort of endorsing it, if you will, they're not taking any action to support or encourage it in any other way than that. And what we would like to see is some action from the county in all of these different areas, some action that we can really show that the county's participating in creating this paradigm shift, this shift in the way that we're thinking on this island about our future. And we really need to move away from how are we going to prepare for the future to how are we going to create the future. And that's what we're trying to get the county to think in that way.
I like how you framed that.
It's just, and we, making that shift has been very hard. And in everybody's thinking, I look at my own thinking, I think, oh, I totally get that. You know, I've been, this is how I've built my career, and this is what I train other people to do to create their own reality. But I look at my own thinking, and I see my own limitations all the time. We have to continually make a course correction between being the victim or subject to responding to the way things are and creating the way things should be that we want them to be. And if we did that collectively as a whole island, we could be pretty powerful. There's a lot of powerful communities around this country and the world who are doing that themselves. And that's, we don't have the leadership on this island that's going to make that course correction for us, so we have to do it as a community.
And I that's an interesting way that you also framed that, that we don't have a leadership that will do that. It's really nice if we all are a part of it, you know, that we don't demand that they do the leading, that we all do it. I know, like, for example, in my community, Kilauea, tonight is the Kilauea Neighborhood Association. That meeting is at 7 o'clock, and I'll certainly be there. They always do a really quality job, and I watch what the Lihui Business Association does. Again, business is part of the community. They do a great job. The Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association, I tend to attend a number of their meetings, and when I haven't named other groups, that we're seeing really high activity out of Eleale Hana Pepe.
Right.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Awesome.
They're showing up hard. And I was frankly relieved to see them speak so strongly at, you know, the Planning Commission meetings, because I'm used to, KKCR is on the North Shore. We're in Princeville. And I'm used to this side of the island often be the most extroverted or really strong in making the statements. And I just was warmed when I saw how much was coming out of the southwest area. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall, and in the studio with me I have Sharon and Ann, and we are talking about the general plan update and the you know, the county and the community at large. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and Second Skin Naturals.
KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea K224CQ Anahola.
The Copper Man, copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke ea o ka aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. And you know, we are also at K224 CQ Moloa'a and K284 AL Haleiwa. Pretty excited that, you know, Oahu can listen to us. And we're at 95.1 on the cable and certainly at kkcr.org, streaming live. And I see we've got plenty of listeners, even from around the world, listening to us right now. So aloha, Quebec, and San Francisco. Where do I got? Japan, United Kingdom, all kinds of places.
Mm-hmm. What is it? Remember Romper Room with the woman with the magic looking glass and the children's show? I see Lucy and I see Sally and I see Tommy.
I actually do, and we are showing our age with that one. So, Sharon, you gave a rather impassioned testimony last time, and I really appreciated what you had to share when you came up. I know that you're relatively new to the general plan, correct?
Correct. And to the topic of water and watersheds.
So what brought your interest into the general plan?
Well, no one seemed to be picking up this topic, and I thought, well, there's me. I'll just jump on it.
What, the topic of water?
Of water and watersheds.
Okay.
And
so that overlaps with Hawaiian cultural values, right?
Very much so. I didn't know all this, of course. To me, water was just something I used to water my garden, my body, and cook with.
And you grew up on Oahu, correct?
I grew up born and raised on Oahu, and then left for many years. Went to the mainland, raised my sons there, and then my husband and I had the great chance to retire here.
And you're up there in Wailua Homestead. Really mm-hmm. quite far up back mm-hmm. near the top of the road towards the back up there near the watershed where Blue Hole and all that is up there.
Well, I want to tell you about my rare gift. On Saturday, February 25th, two friends took my husband and me to the Blue Hole diversion. And, of course, we follow the news. We knew that back in October that some Hawaiian aloha aina folk, I shouldn't say Hawaiian.
Actually, you don't
aloha
know that, right?
Aina. That's right.
They do not know who.
That's right. Some so aloha aina warriors went and worked at the diversion in order to restore approximately 20% of the water.
Okay, and I want to, because I'm very sensitive to this issue relative to KKCR, when you're saying it was Hawaiian aloha aina, as far as I know, nobody knows who did
yes.
this. So that's a presumption.
I take that back.
You're
that's
making a presumption. So. We do not know who might have done that diversion change.
It's true.
Change. Okay, so
yes.
your presumption is because they have a good reason or cause. Is that why you're making that presumption? Because I've been...
I shouldn't make that presumption. So I'll just say that
some Aloha Aina Menehune, or folk, went up, restored 20%, approximately 20%
Someone did it.
The water to the flow so that the North Fork of the Wailua River would not be a dry stream bed. So that's what I was expecting when our friends took us up there.
So my understanding was, and I've been grilled about this by authorities, mm-hmm. that there was a cut in the concrete. The concrete was cut to allow 20% of the water to continue down, and that was by some person in the community. So you went up expecting to see that?
Well, I went up expecting, knowing that there would be water flowing in the North Fork of the Wailua. And to me, that's very important because that river provides the habitat for the native stream species, and it also provides gathering opportunities for Native Hawaiians and folk like me, who I'm not a Native Hawaiian.
Are you Chinese?
I am Chinese American.
Okay.
Yeah. And it provides connectivity of the water from the summit pool of Waialeale to Wailua Nui Ahuano. And I consider that place to be sacred. Having been in a halau here for 10 years, I have a wonderful kumu who has educated all of us in the Haumana in these things. But what I saw there stunned me. I mean, I was pretty much in disbelief because what I observed was that the entryway for the water to go into the North Fork of the Wailua was totally blocked up. And, we spent some time there. We took photos.
100% of the water was diverted.
100%. And then, of course, I could see that 100% of the water was going into the ditch on the left as I face Waialeale.
And so towards Hanama'ulu.
Correct. And, this is the realm of Valakua, and I felt just, this is wrong. This is, it should not be like this. It cannot be like this. It cannot remain this way. So we did what we needed there, spent the time that we felt the place deserved from us, and then we left. But that next week, that was on a Saturday, and we couldn't call any state or federal offices to talk to perhaps a real live person. So we waited until the week came, and I did speak to someone from the Commission for Water Resources Management. I described what I saw, so in essence, lodging a complaint. And I also spoke to the secretary at the USGS, United States
Geological
Survey Office, and said the same things that I said to CWRM. And I actually got a response. And if you will allow me, I'd like to read what that response was.
Okay, yes, please. And so when the North Fork of the Wailua River, when it is diverted, what we do know is that that water goes and it goes through two hydro plants that were there quite some time ago that operate for KIUC, and it also cools down the Kapaya plant, makes it back to the river shortly, then back into the Kapaya Reservoir, then it goes into the Hanamalu Stream. It's best that I've gone and learned, and I went and talked to Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, and Grove Farm has the Kapaya Reservoir and distributes that water. Okay.
Thank you, Felicia. Okay, I received this from Stephen Anthony, the director of the U.S. Geological Survey office in Honolulu. Thank you for your message related to our 4-year cooperative study with the Commission on Water Resource Management to assess the low flow characteristics of streams in Southeast Kauai. As you are aware, we recently made a series of discharge measurements on the North Fork of the Waialua River to characterize the natural, undiverted flow in the river. To help meet the objectives of the study, we communicated to the Commission and Kauai Island Utilities Co-op, that's KIUC, that we would be interested in making a series of discharge measurements along the North Fork of the Waialua River when natural flow conditions could be sustained for at least 12 hours. In discussion with representatives of the, and I'm going to use these acronyms, I hope you will forgive me, of the CWRM and the KIUC, it was determined that the best opportunity for collecting these measurements would be during scheduled ditch maintenance activities when diversion of water would be temporarily stopped, restoring stream flow to its natural condition. Starting on February 21st, 2017, KIUC's ditch operators made adjustments to the diversion near Blue Hole to allow natural flow conditions to be temporarily restored. The following day, USGS staff measured discharge at 11 sites along the North Fork of the Waialua River to characterize stream flow gains and losses under natural flow conditions, or groundwater interaction. During coordination and planning prior to February 21st of 2017, we communicated with KIUC our desire to make the best possible measurements of natural flow conditions in the Blue Hole area. As part of these planning discussions with KIUC, CWRM staff inquired about the possibility of temporarily using sandbags to block off overflow from the dam at the diversion, which would allow all stream flow to be captured in a side channel and then released immediately downstream to the river through a sluice gate. This temporary measure to reduce overflow from the dam would enable us to produce the best possible information for stakeholders and the public, and was not meant to be a permanent modification of flow conditions. USGS learned only on the day of the measurements that the ditch operator had used loose sedimentary material rather than the sandbags to reduce overflow from the dam. USGS did not instruct the ditch operator to place sedimentary material across the dam, nor did USGS have prior knowledge that sedimentary material would be used. USGS informed the ditch operator on the day of the measurements that we would complete all of our measurements by about 4:30 p.m. and that the prevailing diversion condition would no longer be needed for our study after that time. I hope this helps to clarify.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, that's pretty heavy. That's basically saying that they did what they weren't supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, pulling this back to the general plan concept is that, you know, really at Waialua and certainly at Waimea and several other streams, we have diversion issues. So how we manage the water is a very, very big part of everything. And the law says that 50% needs to be able to go downstream, or at least 50% of the water needs to stay in its natural course. The way it's being interpreted, though, is that they're going to get so many, you know, 100,000 gallons per day. I think, I forget the number offhand, like 4,600 gallons or something like that per day. I forget the number, so I shouldn't even use a number. But instead, they're counting when there's a big rain event, they'll count that, what does make it downstream. So when we have a complete dried out riverbed, that really interrupts the life on the river.
You're saying they average it out over time.
Right.
Yeah, they're averaging the volume for the whole river, and so that's a very big issue, and that is a state issue. So I'm pointing back at Anne for a moment here on how, you know, how do we blend those things? Because you worked for a federal agency, right? So how do we put fed, state, and county issues together well like that?
Well, I think that's an interesting question because different levels of government don't have a history of working together. And they clearly have different mandates. So that means what they're directed to do is different and sometimes contradictory. However, I think we're moving into this new era where we're realizing that the left hand has to talk to the right hand. We live on a remote island, and we can't have the federal government or the state government making decisions that are not in the best interest of the community, the residents that live on this island. And, you know, the state and the county have trust responsibilities for natural resources such as water. And they have a responsibility to the people. They are the trustees of those resources, and they need to act and make decisions in the behalf of the people whom are affected by the changes and the uses of those resources. So what we're trying to move for is that the county needs to speak up and say, this is not in the best interest of the people of Kauai. Now, that's not always easy because the people of Kauai don't always agree what's in our best interest. So there's not always a common single voice about what we would like and not like. So that's easier said than not. But by establishing in a general plan what is most important to us on this island, it should make those kinds of decisions much easier. And I'll give you another example off the topic of water and watersheds, but another topic is, for instance, the airport. There's going to be $16 million worth of improvements in our airport.
Are they going to extend the runway? What are they going to do?
They're going to extend the runway. They're going to change the configuration of the check-in areas and the security and all of that. I don't know about you, but I'm not interested in spending $16 million, and I don't think it's in the best interest of the people of Kauai.
So who is they? Is it
it's
state?
State and federal funds. And why has the county not said, this is not a priority for us? We complain about roads and traffic and being the responsibility of the state. Maybe the funds would have been better directed. Now, I do understand not all funds are transferable between one thing or another, between airport and roads. So I understand how that works. But we need to set the priorities on this island, and the county needs to communicate and direct other agencies towards what our priorities are here.
So, and if we have an Akamai listener who wants to call in to 826-7771, please do. I want to just give some counter arguments to what both of you have shared. I know that the extension of the runway has been fought again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if you're fully aware of why they want to extend the runway. Do you understand why they want to? Okay, she said
it's an emergency issue.
Well, it has to do with the size of the planes. At least in the past when they wanted to do it, the upgrades on the planes, they can't take off fully loaded in the daytime. There's not enough. It's too hot on the runway. And again, I can take a correction, but this is what it was. Is that's why one of the reasons that planes fly at night is because it's cooler, so they have better lift, so they can fly full. And when they go off in the heat of the day, they have to have less on the plane because of the length of the runway. So, you know, when we look at that, I know when it was fought before, one of the things was people wanted less planes coming because of the impact of the visitor industry. When there is nothing that can limit how much people come or how much cars can be rented, seemingly, the visitor industry can be completely overwhelming to the community. Though, if newer planes and safer planes can't land and take off, I need to do a show on that because I am not an expert on that by any means. But that is one of the issues. And then I think another issue when we were talking with Sharon about the diversion of the water, they don't need to divert 100% of the water, but what that does is it holds potential over on the Hanama'ulu side of the Wailua Bridge. And so my understanding of being at a lot of these meetings is when we have contention over the traffic, they want to have housing and development on the same side of the bridge as the main infrastructure, the hospital, the planes. And what I feel like we heard over and over again in the discussion with the general plan is where Kauai is unique. When we have, I would say, 100,000 people, we have 70,000 visitors, I mean, residents roughly, and we have an average of about 20,000 visitors. And then I think there's this gray area of people who, you know, maybe they're part-time residents, but they're not exactly on vacation, right? They live here 2-3 months out of the year. What pot do they count in? So maybe there's 100,000 people. But we're stretched out along about 90 miles of road. And so it's long and skinny instead of round, like most communities that would have that size. So I see that there is a push towards making the concentration being in that area from Hanama'ulu to Puhi and taking the water from Wailua in order to do it. And again, I invite somebody to call in and correct me if I have that wrong, but is that accurate with what you two have been looking at?
Yeah, I think that's accurate, and I think the important thing is what you illustrated, case in point, is that every time we make a decision on this island, there are implications in other areas. So, for instance, you know, if we decide to expand our airport and expand our runways and bring more visitors in, then consequently, what are the effects going to be on traffic and on the tourism industry and the population and the demands on our infrastructure? And by the same token, if we decide that we really want to concentrate development, such as housing development, in major corridor areas like Hanama'ulu or in the greater Lihue area, then what are the repercussions from doing that? And they're both negative and positive for every decision that we make. But now we're going to have to start weighing those decisions and understanding what the consequences are. And is this in our best interest for the long term? If we're looking to 2035 as our sort of benchmark for this plan, then what are we going to get by 2035 every time we make a decision like this? And that's what we're trying to say more than anything is, let's think about, as we make decisions, as we take action, no matter whether it's the county, the community, the state government, what are the consequences of that going to be? And we need to start thinking about the future and those consequences. And that's, you know, looking at the impacts for seven generations is a very Hawaiian approach. It's a very indigenous approach. And when are we going to assume that kind of approach to our decision making?
Recently, I was walking around the point, kind of almost towards Makapili Point in Kilauea, around the Kahili Point or rock quarry area, and looking at the remnants, the bones of the mechanics for the pier, and there was a little railway that brought sugar out there. And I was reflecting on how much change happens all the time. And in the traditional land management system, they had ahupua'a, which was along the watersheds. And then even after contact, when Western shipping and all that stuff was coming in, still we see piers that had been there in Anahola, Hanalei, Waimea. All these communities had it because you can imagine before there was cars, right? Mm-hmm. They want to bring the stuff by water, not by boat. But now as we're concentrating things, you know, we have this traffic issue, and that we have also, there's a piece on sea level rise that I think is very important when we look at where do we allow development to happen. Do we put it up high? And like when we look at like the upper area there in Kapa'a near the traffic circle, there's a development that has been proposed. I've had that developer on here, so I'm just trying to give a little bit of a challenge to maybe what the environmental community might want. We're saying we want more housing. Quite a bit of that is going to be more in the direction of affordable, though nothing is affordable anymore because of all the building requirements in the global economy. But that's at least putting housing up high, right? If it's up on the bluff there in Hanamaulu, it's high. Like, really, Kapa'a, Kekaha, Poipu, some areas down there, like if there was a sea level rise, I went to a meeting, they were saying maybe 3 feet, 5 feet. That's going to swamp our roads, our ability to cross that bridge, the sewage systems. Do either of you have an idea on that?
That's 3 to 5 feet in what period of time?
So that was the conservative, and that is by 2050. Yeah. I believe I was at the same meeting as you that DLNR put together a study on climate change. It was a climate change study, and it was not a climate change adaptation plan. They made that quite clear. And they actually applauded the county for creating an additional 20-foot setback. But a 20-foot setback on level ground doesn't make any difference in regards to seawater inundation or sea level rise. 20 feet, if there's no obstruction or no increase in elevation at all, you get the same effect. You get flooding. So some places that will work and other places it won't.
It didn't seem like it brought into consideration heavy rains, too.
Right, and that was my big beef at the meeting, that where DLNR presented some of their findings, is that they simply looked at sea level rise scenarios, and they didn't include any of the other parameters that we consider in climate change when we're looking at impacts. And precipitation is the other. Is it going to be drier or wetter? And what happens when you have sea level rise with an increase in precipitation, more rain? Well, those models would look very different, and they weren't considered in the models.
And what it didn't seem like it considered also is really the natural structure of the land. Like in Kekaha, that was a big wetland. And I've now seen old pictures where people were, it wasn't exactly a paddleboard, but almost like paddleboarding along the water on that marsh there. Kekaha area was much more verdant. And there'd been a lot of fill in there. When you're talking, Sharon, about water diversions, the Waimea River and up high, a lot of water has been diverted over to Kekaha that ends up out in the ocean. So it's a similar challenge, right? And then what happens is Waimea was built after the diversion, and the sugar was absorbing that water. And if they really let the water go, the natural flow, so I have heard, I am not an expert, that much of Waimea would again be a marshy area. And Kapa'a, that was all a marsh that got filled in. So, and in Hanalei, there's been fill in what would be the natural kidney there, both in the Division of Forestry and Wildlife Management. They lifted up those lo'i. They made a bird area there that is up higher. There's been a handful of things that have augmented people when they're building. On the other side, they lift it up, they drain it. So these are like the kidneys. And we all want to be right on the waterfront. Everybody loves to be on the water, but it's actually a pretty vulnerable area where I think over the centuries, there's a pretty big ebb and flow of what happens.
I want to get back a little bit to what Anne brought up before, which was education and how the state the state, of course, is in charge of, I think, most of the curriculum because we have a state-run education program. But we had the opportunity as a number of members of our group go to Kanui Kapono School, which...
Your halau?
No,
the
Kauai Community Coalition.
And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox, Felicia and Marshall, Sharon and Ann. We're discussing the general plan update and county plans.
Uh-huh. Well, at Kanui Kapono School, the teachers were there and the parents of the students. They didn't know much about the plan, and they got interested, which was very good. But one of the things that I learned in studying water is that there's of course the water code that's anchored in the Hawaii revised statutes, and then there's the law itself, and got very interested in the concept of the public trust doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that of course, the whole concept of the diversions that are happening, I mean, they're there. I think that it would be really wise and smart for teachers, parents, their kids, I mean, for people to discuss these things. They can't be things that you just kind of sweep under the carpet. It's just too dynamic a topic. Ola I ka wai, water is life. And this is something that we all have buy-in on. We need to become engaged. I think that, you know, it should be the topic. I think it's kind of like the topic of the year. And everyone's interested.
It is the topic of the year, and I would say even, you know, the Friends of Mahalapu, where they have a lot of concern right now about, you know, what has the potential to contaminate the water in the Poipu, Kaloa area. Mm-hmm. If there is the 2,000 cattle that are there, I know it's being consistently reported 699 cows, but it's 699 pregnant cows that are almost ready to give birth. So in my mind, that's 1,400 cows. You know, maybe some of them won't make it, but water is life, right? So that water issue. And then the other thing that I really learned, I learned so much from the interviews that we do on this program, is there's a very significant diversion from the Kilohana area that brings the water over to the Waitā Reservoir. Mm-hmm. And all that water is actually very needed to be maintaining the cattle, that there's a pretty high demand mm-hmm. to have that concentrated cattle area. So what if that water mm-hmm. Needs to be readapted to its natural stream flow? I know in many places in Europe and the United States that they are removing dams, that they are learning that the run of the river is ecologically what is the most sound.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a problem with one part of this email that I read about 10 minutes ago, talking about the four-year cooperative study with the commission, with CWRM.
Commission on Water Resource
That's
Management.
That's right. And likely this would be, this is with the United States Geological Survey Office. And this is to assess low flow characteristics of Southeast Kauai. And so you're just talking about a stream that's in Southeast Kauai. And, but 4 years, that seems like a stretch. Seems so long.
All these studies take so long that the target often moves, and how much development might happen in the interim. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, continue.
I just believe that all of these kinds of things should be talked about in schools and in homes and in neighborhoods and communities. I think that the public trust doctrine should be out there loud and clear for people, and teachers should be teaching that in schools. I myself went to McKinley High School on Oahu, and I never even knew that McKinley was responsible for Hawaii's annexation.
Right.
I did not learn that in high school.
Did you learn that it was an overthrow in high school?
No. We did not learn any of those facts. I learned about the overthrow and everything else after it pretty succinctly after I moved here.
To Kauai in what year?
In 2006.
And so you went to school in the 70s?
I went to school there in 63 to 67, McKinley.
Okay. Okay,
yeah.
You look younger than that. So, So in the 60s, you were not learning accurate Hawaiian history.
We were not. And history was one of my favorite topics.
And what did you guys learn in history?
Well, we learned European history, and we learned American history.
How about Chinese history?
No.
How about plantation history?
Not at all.
Yeah.
All of that was pretty much, I'd have to say this honestly, kept from us. And it's tragic and shameful.
Good. I'd like to continue this topic that Sharon brought up on education, because I think the value of following this general plan so closely and creating working groups around the general plan. I should say that I just want to talk a little bit about that, because education's been an important part of what we've gained from this process of being engaged. We started off working with the neighborhood associations. There's, depending on how you count them, 8 or 9 around the island, and bringing them together and then expanding from there. And as the first draft, first of 2 drafts so far, and there'll be another one, came out on the general plan, we broke up into 13 working groups to try and dive in and break up the plan, 351-page plan, into the different sectors and really deeply understand both the history and the current situation in each of those sectors. So one of the most profound experiences that we've had from this group, the Kauai Community Coalition, is the learning that's taken place. And a lot of what Sharon's learned about water and water quality and water rights have been a result of diving deep into these topics. So we really encourage other people to get involved in the general plan process to improve your understanding of actually what's going on here.
Yeah, and maybe even bringing in the business community and the Ahamoku groups and even the sovereign community groups, because
exactly.
We really, the more diversity that you have, the better off it's going to be what comes out. Aloha, thank you for calling KKCR. You're on the air.
Hello there.
Hello.
I just would like to add to the discussion, because I'm not hearing anything about Hawaiian nationals.
Well, please add more. Please add more.
The Hawaiians nowadays want to go back home.
Yes.
And they're being intervened on, because their government isn't being recognized by the states and by the courts. And people that are Hawaiian nationals are being criminalized when they use their license plates and driver's license. So, in your general plan, do you have any discussions about the Hawaiian national?
Well, I will say that the general plan really did make an effort to stretch from the first draft, or the first draft in the last piece. They really did add quite a lot, and this is going to be published in Olelo. It will be in the Hawaiian language as well. So when it's finished, the whole thing will be in that, and it is less about governance and more about direction. So I really encourage the Hawaiian nationals to take a serious look at it and actually voice in, because regardless of whether it is the nation of Hawaii or the state of Hawaii, we still have a future in front of us, and we still all need to be looking at what kind of roads do we want, where do we want the water, how do we want to do, for example, co-stewardship agreements between now and that time that the Hawaiian nation has a more stronger recognized influence, regardless of how deep or that is or not. I'm not really prepared to argue that right now. I know today in the House, the bill of the co-stewardship agreement in Haena, the fishing co-stewardship agreement, I believe did pass the House. Kale, are you still there?
You know, you guys are still talking about U.S. law.
Yes, and
okay.
Hawaii state law. I get that, and county law, but I'm saying that this general plan, it's really not about who has which laws. It's saying this is what the direction that we're wanting to go. I get that it is not the general plan of the Hawaiian nation.
And I have to say the Hawaiian Nation has not been well represented in terms of providing input to the plan. And we've really tried to reach out and encourage more of that. And I just want to say that the opportunities for input into this plan are narrowing.
You know, the Hawaiian Nation does not recognize the U.S. Constitution.
Yes.
It's not a friend of ours. It's
yes.
an enemy.
I understand.
So we need to transition away from that. And you guys are not doing that.
Well, I'm trying, and Anne's trying. We are trying in that saying every part of this plan that is being laid out needs to be looking at and recognizing the traditional practices so that future movement on the island is going to be in alignment with goals and objectives of people who have the traditional...
You know, the golden objective of a Hawaiian national is to reclaim our lands.
I get that.
Because all those titles are fraudulent.
I imagine that one of your goals is to reclaim your water, correct?
That's one of them also, yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I'm not sure how many of you out there understand what the public trust concepts are. They were worked diligently into the Hawaii Revised Statutes in 1978. And I want to just tell you and everyone else...
Hawaii Revised Statute is a war crime.
Well, but it offers a lot of protection. If you will just take a few minutes to listen, I can tell you what it says.
And it benefits the U.S. citizen, not the Hawaiian national.
Will you take the time to hear these few things?
Sure.
Okay. Well, number one, protection for the environment. Number two, protection for traditional and customary Native Hawaiian rights. Number three, protection for appurtenant rights, such as the water rights of Kuleana and Taro lands. Number four, domestic water protection for domestic water uses. And number five, and not least important, of course, it just happens to be number five the way I wrote it, protection for the reservations for the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. And to go even further, when I saw that there was this email promoting or talking, telling me that there was going to be this four-year cooperative study, I actually called the Department of Hawaiian Homelands today, left a message to ask them if they knew anything about this, because these folks should be at the table. So that's all I have to say about this right now.
Kale?
Yes. You know, you mentioned Hawaiian Homes. You know, those guys are a real big disappointment. Okay? They support genocide. You know, being 50%, and if you're less than that, you're nothing.
Right.
So, they're part of the problem. Hawaiian Homes. And OHA. Okay, and it starts with the Constitution, like everything else. They're listening to the wrong laws. The Organic Act is not from here. It's from Congress. And it got here from the Republic of Hawaii, who doesn't own nothing but gave everything away. And you guys are continuing that by supporting this general plan without the Native Hawaiians nationals' input.
K.O.?
Yes.
You know that I have tried to bring that input in, and I respect and honor that this government document is not recognized by your community because it is not the legitimate government. And as I say on this show regularly, we have parallel realities. And I have learned in the past couple of years, I've had this epiphany that The statement that this is an occupied nation is accurate. It's been shaming and hard to sit there and really see those core documents, and we see them, and they're in the international courts. I think when one looks at the true history and the original documents, and then even what the courts are saying now, there is accuracy in what you're saying, K.O., and if we are an occupied nation, well, the occupier is here. So we have to have, and certainly for Kauai Soapbox, we look at both realities, and we honor your message and respect your message, and also saying, how do we work with both aspects? I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show when we were talking with Kealoha Pishota from the community on Hawaii Island and what they're going through with the contested case hearings for the 30-meter telescope, which is just right at the jugular of this conflict, and poor stewardship by the government and constant breaking of rules and laws and commitments over time. So we recognize it, we honor it, and we are also working with the existing government without holding them in malice and saying, all right, well, this is where we're at, and so how can we be a parallel influence to make sure that our Hawaiian presence, not just history, our Hawaiian presence and future is honored. And so look at us as maybe what Queen Liliuokalani might have said, the honest American trying to help do the right thing. And I want to say, even if we don't look at political mistakes, when we look at environmental good choices, by honoring what the Kanaka Mo'oli did successfully, they successfully lived resiliently on this island with more people than we have now, with very, very minimal trading.
Alicia, the state is a fraud, okay? They cannot prove authority.
I get
and
that.
And yet you guys support them like they was.
So I'm sorry to
disagree. America.
Okay, I am.
And Hawaii is not America.
I understand that.
Okay,
and
thank
I'm
you.
Sorry
Aloha,
to disappoint
goodbye.
You. Aloha. Okay, so, I understand the passion and respect the passion and commitment to that awareness. I want to just take a moment and announce a few things that are coming up because we're almost at the end of the show. Tomorrow, there is an International Women's Day at the Kauai Performing Arts Center, the big theater at Kauai Community College at 5 o'clock. They're doing what they call Civics 101 workshop. So that is civics on the United States and Hawaii. But at 5 p.m., they're looking at federal advocacy so people can be working towards keeping Hawaii pono. At 5 o'clock on how they deal with the United States government. At 6 p.m., it is Hawaii advocacy, helping people understand the system that is in place so goals that are wanted are met also. And then at 7:15 p.m., there's a film called Equal Means Equal, and this is put on by the YWCA and the Women's Caucus is also putting on a series of events wanting to be making sure that there is proactive influence on how our world is through how we push on whatever layer of government. So Friday, March 17th at the Princeville Community Center, Monday, March 20th at the Kapa'a Public Library, Thursday, March 23rd in Lihue at the HGEA Union Hall, the Hawaii Government Employees Association. All of that is from 7 to 9. And then I know tomorrow, would you like to announce this, Anne, what you're doing tomorrow, 6 to 8?
Yeah, it's a pretty busy evening tomorrow night, but from 6 to 8 at the Kapa'a Library. We're having a continued discussion on the general plan, and that's with the Kauai Community Coalition. We're preparing for the next Planning Commission meeting on March 14th. So if you are interested in the general plan and want to provide input in a meaningful way, please join us tomorrow night to prepare for that meeting, the Planning Commission meeting next week.
Tomorrow night, the Farmers Union United meeting from 6 to 8 at the Anahola Clubhouse.
And what interest is being gathered for Waimea CERT class. And
Community Emergency Response Team.
Exactly right, Felicia. If you are interested, contact Jason Paloa, the CERT coordinator at kfdcert@kauai.gov.
So that's like Kauai Fire Department CERT. Okay.
Or you could call 808-645-0661.
And then one of our very beloved community members, Danny Hashimoto, who just does so much for so many people. We are having a big healing fundraiser party on March 10th, which I believe is that this Friday?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, golly, there's another overlapping meeting on that one. So three things this Friday, but Danny's healing fundraiser party is at Lydgate from 5:30 p.m.
And I wanted to ask you, in the beginning, you were talking about accountability in the general plan and that there wasn't the accountability that was needed in the 2000 plan.
That's the heart of the matter.
Yeah. What is the model here? Is there still a piece that can be added into this plan that would generate that accountability and make it in some way compulsory?
The answer is yes. And that will make the difference between a plan that actually is results-based and a plan that just sits on the shelf. And it's in the structure of the plan. You have to clearly know where it is you want to go. Set targets for what that looks like in terms of affordable housing, transportation, energy. We do that a lot in energy. We say, 30% renewables by 2050. That's a target. You know where you're going. You know if you're moving in that direction. It's something that you can measure along the way. That's what we would like to see for all 10 sectors in the plan. We'd like to know who's going to be responsible for ensuring that we're meeting the milestones and moving in that direction. We want somebody to actually measure and see if we're making progress or not. We want to have a reporting system. We want to know every 6 months, are we making progress or not? Every 2 years, a full report across all the sectors because each sector is affecting the other. All of that is still missing from the plan. There's lip service paid to it in the plan, but it's not built into the structure, and it's not in a way that's really going to be enforced and implemented as a part of the plan itself.
So that would take funding. That sounds like a big project, all of that follow through.
No, it doesn't. It takes a really strong, yes and no, I should say, but it takes a really strong structure in the plan to begin with so that it is structured for results. That's not hard to do. It's done all the time in plans, in general plans, in strategic plans, in management plans, in sustainability plans. The measures can be done in, or what we call indicators. What do you look at to see if progress is being made, if change is taking place? They can run the gamut. They can be looking at studies that are already being done. We have a lot of water quality monitoring already going on this island. How do we take the data that are out there already and look at the trend? Are we improving our water quality over time? Is it getting worse over time? Are we going to meet our targets for water quality? That's a perfect example. And in other ways, there are other ways you can measure, use indicators that are already out there to tell the story if we're moving in the direction of the reality of the future that we want to create here.
So has that whole accountability piece been resisted so far? Why is that not a part of it already?
Well, interestingly enough, from the beginning, the first draft of this plan, they said that implementation was important, and that was the shortfall in the last plan. We've given them models. I've given them models. It's something I've worked on a lot, what we call monitoring and evaluation of plans. And they have stated that it's important in the plan, but they have fallen short in terms of structuring the plan so that it is really measurable, that we can see change taking place as a result of the plan being implemented itself.
Okay. Now, there's still opportunity for input, and there's going to be another revision made. Is that it?
Correct. So the opportunities for input right now are through the vis-a-vis the Planning Commission meetings. They're the second and the fourth Tuesday of each month. So the next one will be the 14th of March and the 28th of March. For both of those meetings, they're scheduled to hear more of the changes and the input on the general plan. After that, there's no schedule. We don't know what will happen. We take it one Planning Commission meeting at a time. But eventually, once the Planning Commission accepts the changes to the plan and the plan as a whole, then it will move on to the county council. It gets progressively harder to provide input and to make changes to the plan, but it can be done. So we're following our group, the Kauai Community Coalition, is following each step of the plan, and every time there's a change, whether it's declared or not, we're watchdogging it to make sure these are changes that we would like, both positive and negative.
And the Kauai Community Association, do you have a website or contact?
No, we're just a loosely associated bunch of people who've been following this plan and really care, and we came out of the neighborhood associations, and we've created our own coalition. We just call ourselves that because everyone kept saying, what do you call yourself? So we made up a name.
Right. So, but people could connect with you tomorrow night.
Yes, please.
And where again is it?
Kapa'a Library from 6 to 8.
In that meeting room. I noticed, and Jazz with John is going to be at the top of the hour. We're going to hear the county council report in a moment. We're seeing, it almost looks like we got a serial killer on these female seals. We lost another young, healthy female seal. Looks like was probably mauled or beaten somehow.
Right.
Very sad. And then we have 11 species are overfished in Hawaii. I had to just point that out because you are a NOAA person. And she's shaking. You were a NOAA person. Retired NOAA person. And then the pesticide bill, House Bill 790, very similar to the joint fact-finding study that is deferred until Thursday because they made some updates, like four amendments. So that's kind of what's up. So we just have time to just not even say anything other than aloha and nahui ho each. And then we'll hear the county council report, and Jazz with John will be after that. So Ann Walton, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Sharon Goodwin, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Felicia and Marshall.
And Sharon, thanks so much, Felicia. Have a great night.
Okay, and Jazz with John is coming up after the county council report. And the Lihue Post Office seems to be the big thing on it tomorrow, like if they're going to move it or not.